Welcome, everybody, to Diamond & Diamond Lawyers LLP podcast. I got two great guests here, a senior lawyer at Diamond & Diamond, Edward Kosev, and senior claims counsel at FCT Insurance, John Tracy. Welcome, guys. We are going to talk about fraud, title insurance, as a buyer, as a lender. We're going to talk about Starbucks vacations, a whole bunch of personal stuff. It's actually interesting. You're the first person outside of a, you know, broker, real estate agent that's on our podcast. So this is going to go very different. We're going to talk about some gloomy stuff, but we're going to also try to keep it light. And main reason is because with insurance, as you're going to tell for everybody, there's a reason why you have it, because it's when crap goes bad.
For sure. For sure. And yeah, if we can keep them listening when we're talking about an insurance policy, I think you're doing a great job.
Right. Exactly. So, John, tell us a little bit. I mean, obviously, you're a lawyer by training. You're still a lawyer, but yeah. You know, you started out after law school not too long ago, it sounds like. How many years have you been practicing?
For sure. So I was called in 93. So I guess I'm 30 years out now.
Edward was born in 1990. Where were you born, Edward?
At least
give or take
12 years before.
Okay. All right.
I was just getting into high school.
Yeah. Me and Edward went through puberty when you became a lawyer.
Okay. Got it. Well, things weren't too different, I don't think. I practiced real estate law for 11 or 12 years. And I've been at FCT now for 19 years, dealing exclusively with claims under title insurance policies.
Amazing. And what made you want to switch over from private practice to FCT?
Well, if you'd asked me then, it was control of my life. It was doing real estate. So deals would close. They wouldn't close. I was supposed to be away for the weekend. And of course, they wouldn't close. And you've got to do all this stuff. So, but if you ask me now, I think it's been really interesting career, because I've seen everything that can go wrong with a real estate deal.
Right.
Whereas when I was closing them myself, you know, I just wanted to go right. And most of them did. But so I've learned a lot, and I've worked throughout the country. So yeah.
That's really cool. Yeah. That's really cool. So you now with FCT as a lawyer, you've kind of seen what title insurance really does for you. What is title insurance?
Okay, there you go. So title insurance, there are two forms. One insures an owner, one insures a lender. The owner has 33 covered risk, basically covering most like the defects on title, prior liens, encumbrances, property tax arrears. It also covers a lot of things that might happen after you close. So fraudulent, you know, someone claiming an interest in your title because of fraud. Huge area of coverage that we spend a lot of money on claims is when you're forced to remove or remedy something that's because it was built without a building permit.
So these are people who you buy a home.
Yeah.
And do you buy the insurance before the transaction, or do you buy it after the transaction?
Almost invariably, it's the lawyer who's acting for the client who will purchase the title insurance. We do have an avenue where someone who doesn't have title insurance can buy it directly from FCT.
But most people do it upon closing with their
lawyer. It's a disbursement on their legal bill. And the premium's tied to the value of the house. It's a one-time premium.
And how long does that title insurance last?
The wording of the policy, it insures you forever.
Interesting. So as long as you own the home, listen to this, everybody, as long as you own the home, title insurance will cover you.
Isaac, even longer.
There you go.
Forever. So we like it. It does say forever. We get very few claims after someone sold the house, but it does happen, mostly in the context of litigation. So our policy contains a duty to defend. So if an owner is often brought in on a lawsuit, so they'll cover there, but majority of claims happen while the person owns the home.
So guys, listen to this. FCT will cover you better than any marriage contract ever. Just throwing it out there.
Till death do you part.
Death do you part, literally. Great policy. So it covers you forever and I want to talk about as a homeowner, and Edward, maybe you can chime in as a lawyer, right? Because it kind of starts here. Client comes to us and Diamond and says, I purchased a home. It closes in March. Where does it fit in with title insurance? When do you bring it up and what do you tell them?
Yeah. So it's usually, you know, kind of disclosed at the beginning with our service agreement that when we first do our intakes, there's a service agreement that most clients have to sign. We let them know that there's going to be some disbursements. We give them a quote, and you know, part of those disbursements is the title insurance. I usually find, not often, but quite, you know, there's some first time home buyers typically will ask, well, what is this title insurance? Do we need it? You know, and we kind of go through that. We try to give a quick summary, kind of like what you did, about what title insurance is and how it protects them and why it's a good idea to get title insurance versus, you know, paying thousands of dollars in legal fees to give a lawyer opinion and do all the searches that you have to do, that title insurance basically covers you without having to really do a lot of these off title searches. So it's kind of at the beginning, but then it usually comes up throughout the transaction too. You know, they'll ask some more questions. They'll ask, when do we get the policy and all these sorts of things. So it is quite kind of throughout
the process.
Yeah.
So John, we, you know, as a lawyer and to listeners, we get this title insurance policy. I move into the house. I'm a new owner, and all of a sudden I get in and I have a pool and I'm jumping in the pool, and all of a sudden the city comes in and says, why the hell do you have a pool? You shouldn't have a pool.
It happens.
Right. And this is where title insurance kind of kicks in.
So for sure. What you're talking about there, Isaac, is probably our covered risk 24. So if you're forced to remove or remedy something because it was built by a governmental authority because it was built without a permit, right? So that's a covered risk in the policy. So long as whatever it is, in your case, the pool was built prior to you closing, was built without a permit, and the municipality is forcing you to move it or to remove it, That's a covered.
And you guys will pay to remove the whole thing.
Yeah. So, you know, we will, yeah, whatever the order to comply says. So it's remove, and usually there's some diminution in value. It's mostly a lot of additions. Decks are huge, built.
Right.
So that was
my next slide. Listen, pools are usually done with a permit,
yeah,
from my experience. So I guess the easier one is a deck. So yeah, decks, tons of decks are done by like Cousin Barry.
For sure.
Cousin Barry does a deck with his two hands, and then you're now left with this beautiful deck. And do a lot of times, do you find that they make you remove it completely or redo it? Like, what do you find in general
is the outcome? Generally with decks, it's you can rebuild it.
Right.
Like sometimes it's actually, even notwithstanding there's no permit, it was built fine. But so you need an engineer sometimes just to certify it.
Right.
The bigger ones, you know, we've seen entire houses built without permits.
Really?
Yeah.
Full houses.
You know, usually more in the country when nobody's watching. Additions built without permits, you know, mass. One of the crazier ones was some guy built a wine cellar underneath the garage. Dug it out by hand, failed to realize that there was a big, thick, you know, concrete slab with a car parked upon it, and didn't really reinforce it. So
that was
basically just, you know, we had to live without the wine cellar.
No, fair enough.
Yeah,
fair enough. I get it. So, you know, those are obviously easy ones to kind of explain. Explain some of the harder situations where title insurance would kick in, where things that, you know, most people wouldn't even know about.
For sure. So a lot of what Edward was saying, the benefit from a lawyer and from the client, is in title insurance, on a residential title insurance policy, certain searches you don't need to do, right? Right. So you don't need to do a tax search. You don't need to do a work order search.
And why not? What does that mean? Like, so if there's taxes to be paid, then it's not disclosed, then title insurance would pay?
Correct. So that's covered taxes that were, you know, from before closing. That's covered under the policy. And it just streamlines the process from, like, there are fewer disbursements for the client. I mean, right, they've got to pay the premium for the policy. But in addition to those disbursements they're saving, they're getting a lot of coverage that they wouldn't have otherwise. Like, for example, if there's no title insurance policy and someone, like, you know, registers a mortgage on your house after you close, a fraudulent mortgage.
Right. So that was my next question. I guess fraud is
Fraud's a huge
risk too, because we see it a lot. And I know there was a few cases where people put mortgages on homes that don't actually live in the homes. And then all of a sudden you're left with a $400,000 mortgage with no money.
For sure. So those are our scarier cases.
Right.
And the ones we've seen recently, like last summer, not only was the home mortgaged, it was actually sold.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so crazy. So I'd love to hear, I know this one's great. Can you explain to us how this house was sold under somebody else's?
Sure. Sure. So it's happened a few times, and mostly the legit owners are, you know, working overseas, or it's tenanted.
Right.
Right. And so it's organized crime. They'll install someone as a tenant normally, so they have access to the property. They get another accomplice to pose as the owners, and they'll even list it with it doesn't happen all the time.
Right.
But they'll list it with a real estate agent on the MLS service, usually at a very low price.
And what do they have, like fake ID that they're the
owners? For sure. So the ability to create fake ID these days is quite quite high. Like you will look at the ID and unless you, you know, are, well, even if you are a pro, you're not going to know the difference.
Yeah.
So it's that good.
Yeah. So the agents, the lawyers think they're dealing with the legit owners. The legit owners aren't anywhere around. It's sold usually quickly because it's listed for a low price. And then, you know, we've either insured the person who's lost it or the person who's bought it, who's equally innocent.
Wow.
And the way the law breaks down in Ontario anyway, is that, you know, if you've had your house sold from underneath you, the law will says you'll get it back.
Right.
Right. You know, got to jump through the hoops.
And what happens to the person that bought the property?
Yeah. Yeah. So absent title insurance, you know, what's the average cost of a house in Toronto these days, right?
Right.
It's a mil or more.
So if you didn't have title insurance, you may be out that money.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have to sue everybody.
To go sue criminals, right? I mean, like,
yeah, go sue criminals, you know, maybe of course they're going to sue their lawyer, even though the lawyer probably didn't do anything wrong. They're going to sue the agents, but yeah, so that's the way it breaks down.
Wow. It's funny. Cause we've actually had, I mean, cause we as lawyers do our very best to try and identify fake ID when necessary. And I don't know, Edward, if you had anything, but I had two situations, one where, you know, somebody they gave us, they didn't have any form of ID except Canadian citizenship. They were both born in, their citizenship dates were different. So one had their citizen date like in 1995, the other one had it in, I don't know, 2003. And then the type font was like exactly the same, the exact same. It was so weird. And the clerk put it to my attention. I said, how is that even possible? I said, 10 years apart, there's no way that these can be exactly the same. So, you know, we just told them, listen, we can't help you in your transaction. And I think they went to like two or three other lawyers before they realized that this ID wasn't working. I also had another situation, and you guys can comment on this too, where we had somebody actually dress up in a wig and try to, do you remember this?
Yeah.
And actually try to pose as the husband. So so, you know, one of our lawyers met with her as the
husband,
the wife. And then she's like, oh, my husband's not available. He'll be available tomorrow. So they log on to Zoom the next day and it's literally her with a wig. And we just, you know, you don't know what to say. We're like, we're going to have to, we're going to have to call you back.
That's great. You know, so that some lawyers might have been fooled. Believe there are some. Another classic one is if you're looking at a passport or you're looking at a driver's license and a citizenship card, and it's the exact same photo on all three pieces of ID, that's a giveaway.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, a lot of these people the criminals are a lot smarter than that.
People, you should know that it takes 6 hours to sit in a passport line in one day. You're not going to three government agencies in one day. I'm just letting you know right now.
Yeah. So. I actually had that one where we had a guy that his picture looked exact same on both passport and driver's license.
Right.
And that didn't go through, that deal fell apart on us.
Right.
And I've had one where it was actually FCT. We were on the buying side, rejected our policy due to, I guess, in the background, some sort of fraud that you were having with the seller. Or the name,
came up.
Yeah. And then that turned out to the sellers turned out to be fraudsters. But
it's interesting. So John, tell us some crazy stories from your end.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, we got a lot of really funny things.
We'd love to hear that.
So a lot of things, people don't understand what's not crazy. So we've got claims like, oh, the towel rack's broken. There's a roach infestation. My appliances aren't working.
Appliances not working.
My neighbor's throwing dog crap over the fence.
That should be covered, by the way, for all of you listeners. That should be. No, I'm joking.
So a lot of that is just education of both our customer, our lawyer customers and our homeowner customers. But the fraud ones are really freaky. The ones that kind of get pretty nasty sometimes are our access claims. So we'll insure access to the property.
What does that mean?
So legal access, right? So, you know, Edward would know, you got to make sure that there's a right of way or it fronts onto a public street. But a lot of the places in, you know, up north, cottage country, it's just like a prescriptive easement or the road doesn't have a legal status and somebody gets somebody angry and overnight it's barricaded.
Yeah.
So on those often we'll team up with other title insurers because there's five or six people that might be affected. Interesting one we had was a guy had a waterfront property and really had to cross across his neighbor's property to get to. He and the neighbors, you know, got into a spat, neighbor blocked it up. We could not get him access. So, because it was basically just prescriptive, like he was claiming a prescriptive easement, but
there wasn't,
yeah, there wasn't one. So we essentially settled his claim by saying, okay, what's this property worth, you know, as if it were an island, right? So, because he could kind of park here, walk through the water, and then back onto his property. And so those ones have the human element because people get angry at each other. And,
right.
But we try to stick to the title issues. But
so if I don't want to let my mother-in-law on my property, can I call title?
No? No, sir. No, it's pedestrian and vehicular accident. There is, you can ask for the mother-in-law endorsement.
But, I don't know. I don't know if you're going to cover it.
No, sir.
And so typically, if you had to give an example of what title insurance would cost, I mean, is there a dollar? How do you guys
work it out? So it's based. So the one thing, with there was always, as we said at the beginning, there's two policies, right? There's a lender policy and an owner policy.
Yeah, we haven't even got to the lenders
yet. Two separate things. A lot of lenders require a policy,
right?
So your customer, who's buying the house, has no choice. And for that second policy, for the homeowner's policy, it's like a nominal additional amount of 56. I don't know, like it's in and around $100.
Right.
You know, I think on a typical, our website would tell you, but like it's maybe a thousand-ish. Yeah, a thousand-ish at one time.
It's a one-time charge. So I mean, anybody who's wondering out there if title insurance is worth it, I think it's almost like a no-brainer, isn't it?
Well, for sure. What am I going to say? Yeah. No, I think it is. You know, the majority of people, thankfully, will never have to make a claim.
Yeah.
But it's there. Like, you know, if you, like our guy who's bought the house from a fraudster, like that was a wise investment on his lawyer's part and on his part.
100%.
And you know, a lot of our claims are small property tax arrears. So, you know,
most of that stuff comes through.
Yeah.
So Edward, when one of our clients has a claim, do they call FCT directly? Do you usually talk to you first? Like
they usually come to us first with the issue.
Right.
And we always tell them during the meeting when we're signing with them as well, you know, like after closing, if something comes up, feel free to reach out to us and we'll give you an idea of, you know, is this something that one, you should be suing the seller or buyer or whatever the situation is. And if it's something title insurance will cover you. So we'll let them know, this is potentially something title insurance will help, and then sort of direct them and help them with filing the claim with FCT. And then they kind of take it from there. At that point, their claims counsel will deal with the client directly usually.
Okay.
And then come to us if we need to give a document or something or agreement. They don't have it. We have to give it to them. So,
right.
But for the most part, once it's done, it's with them.
It's with them.
We deal with the insureds and, you know, just sort of from all the lawyers listening, if you are going to submit the claim and act on your client's behalf, make sure you discuss your fees, because we won't generally pay a lawyer fees to submit
claim
to us, but we try to make it, you know, easy, can be done online. We've got experienced team
that will help out.
Yeah,
and exactly. Most people can probably fill out a form by themselves.
Oh yeah, anyway. For sure.
It's
for
super
sure.
easy. You can totally do it on your own online.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. And once we get it, you know, we've got a duty to investigate it. So just because the client hasn't submitted it under the proper risk or, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be perfect. No. You'll walk it through. Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, you know, and, you know, a lot of people are worried that, if I say the wrong thing, it's going to screw me. But you guys kind of walk them through and say, we understand your issue. You know, as long as it's real, we're going to help you out.
For sure.
So we talked a little bit about this before and I want to now explain it. So there's also investors, lenders, people who lend on mortgages. There's a lot of you out there that are, you know, doing second mortgages and whatever with brokers. And, you know, I don't even know if many of them actually know that they get title insurance, because a lot of times lawyer, like for me, I tell my clients, no, you're getting title insurance. That's not a choice, especially as a lender. But maybe you can explain how that differs from what we were talking about before. And
for sure. And different kinds. So the majority of our claims from lenders are, we cover a lot of things, but a lot of them are priority issues.
Right.
Right.
So what's a priority issue?
So, okay. So the mortgage was supposed to be in first priority. So when the property is sold, they get first.
Right.
But you know, things happen. Lawyers make mistakes.
Yeah.
CRA swoops in. So what those claims are resolved is okay. And of course the lender has to sell the property generally. So it has to, you know, through power of sale before there's going to be a claim.
So there needs to be a loss first.
For sure. Right. So
then they can, you can file.
Exactly. So while they know, thank you for asking that. They should tell us, right? So say classic example is refinance. I registered my new mortgage, supposed to be a first, but the owner, you know, missed the last two payments on the existing mortgage. So that lender says, well, I'm not discharging. Right.
Right.
So then we have this new mortgage that's supposed to be first, but it's a second. So in that case, we'd say, thanks for letting us know, you know, we'll, if and when the mortgage goes into default, you know, keep us up to date. But you're right. That, there has to be a loss.
Yeah. Right. And so here's an interesting one that we had and explained, you know, title insurance got kicked in on this. And Edward, I don't remember if you were on this particular file, but we had an issue with a house sale where there was a registered charge or something from like 30 years ago. The lawyer died. There was a there was no will. And the risk was that theoretically, because there was a joint tenancy with a wife and a daughter, I don't remember exactly, but that theoretically somebody could have came out of the woodworks in the last 20 years and say, no, I'm sibling B and yep. I have interest in this property.
For sure.
And we couldn't even fix the instrument.
Yeah.
But I think what happened was, and you can explain the logistics behind it, one title insurer passed it on to another title insurer and says, okay, you know, up until this date, if anyone makes a claim, I'm good. But then after this date, when you sell the house, then the new title insurer kicks
for
in.
Sure.
They had to agree.
Right. So what we're talking, it's really like a paper problem.
Right.
You know? I mean, but it's real. It's on title. It could be an old mortgage or an old deed that's not. And so we will often insure over those things, meaning we'll issue a policy to the new owner, the new lender,
right.
No exception to coverage for this issue, and saying, you know, generally, like if they do come out of the woodwork and they try to sell the house under the 30-year-old mortgage,
right.
You know, that's covered. But because you knew about it going in, we're not going to cover you when you can't sell. What we will do is offer the same coverage to somebody that wants to buy it from you.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's exactly. Like, that's an endorsement. It's called a limited marketability endorsement that we'll give. Like for a lender, we'll pretty much insure over anything.
Right.
For an owner, you know, something like that.
Right.
It's old. Yeah.
So, you know, it sounds to me, so you have a lender situation, you have a buyer situation. Obviously, as a seller, you're already covered for previous when you bought the
correct
the property.
That's so right.
Almost every transaction that occurs with somebody who's borrowing or buying or selling a house, title insurance should be or is involved, right?
Yeah, that's the first thing. If you've got a problem real estate file, you know, as a lawyer, first thing you should ask your client is, do you have title insurance, right? You get a requisition you can't
right.
know what to do with, ask them first.
Ask them first, for sure. Does the market and the way the real estate market works affect the way title insurance premiums go?
Well, our premiums are tied to the value of the house. Like it's sort of a scale,
right?
So the more expensive the house in the stages, yeah, the premium will be higher.
Got it.
Yeah.
Is there a cap to coverage?
The coverage is capped at the policy amount, which is basically the amount the person paid for it. There's inflation coverage in there. So it goes up to 200% of that. And if they want, they can purchase a market value endorsement. So if someone bought their house in 1992,
right.
The fact that it's, you know, if they paid $200,000 for it, the fact is, you know, they have $400,000 coverage now, you know, maybe not great because the thing's worth $1 million.
So do you go back to the title insurance? Like, hey,
I think you have to get that market value endorsement at the time you buy. Don't quote me on it.
But got it.
Yeah.
And so I want to move into some other personal stuff and we can cut it up, whatever. Where did you go to law school?
Went to Queens Law School.
All right.
Graduated very nice. 1991. Nice place.
And did you do your undergrad there as well?
No, I went to McGill.
Oh, you went to McGill. Yeah. So you speak French or no?
A petit peu, oui. I mean, we deal with claims in Quebec, so I do have to... You know, I attend mediations in French and, you know, I don't know if I settled the case or not,
but it was good enough.
For sure.
No one called you back afterwards.
No.
And, you went to law school in Queens, and in your private practice, were you a sole practitioner or you worked with another firm?
I worked for a couple small firms. I articled in Bay Street in 1991,
okay.
15 students, 4 got hired back. I was not one.
Yeah.
And then I worked at a small firm, and then I did 7 years on my own doing real estate. estate.
And that was out in Kingston or here?
No, that was in Toronto. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I was one of the original work from home people before COVID. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah. Very nice. So people would come to your house?
I would generally meet them at their houses. No Tim Hortons.
Yeah.
So all of our frauds deals are assigned to Tim Hortons.
For whatever it is.
I try to avoid that. Yeah. But yeah, they would come to my house.
So, amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Edward, tell us a little bit about your background. I know you've been with us at Diamond and Diamond. I think it's now been 3 years.
Yeah.
Right.
Four years. August was 3 years.
Yeah. And so where were you before? Where did you go to law school? Tell us about your path.
So I went to law school actually in the UK. I did my law degree in University of Birmingham. I then came back. I did the 1 year or it's an accreditation program. It took me a year. Wrote the bar exam, got called in 2014, I think.
Okay.
And basically been doing real estate since I articled with my very first firm downtown. It was a small boutique firm. And just been doing real estate ever since.
Very nice. So nine years doing real estate law. Yeah. One of our senior lawyers and go-to kind of experts in commercial and residential real estate. Okay, guys, we're going to do a quick fire questions.
Oh, I love it.
Just answer. How old were you when you knew you wanted to become a lawyer?
21.
24.
Was that the same year you went to law school?
Yeah. Yes.
What's the year you decided that you don't want to be a lawyer? Just kidding, guys. Just kidding.
2 years in?
Yeah, most people will say that. If you could tell your 15-year-old self whether or not to become a lawyer, would you tell them to do so?
I'll let you go first.
I would say yes. I would say be prepared is probably not what you are expecting at 15 years old.
Matlock and suits.
No, it's not Matlock. You're not going to solve a case like that. And be prepared to take the long view and be prepared to work hard for sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I would probably say something similar. Maybe think it through. Maybe talk to some people in advance. Maybe some lawyers before you actually make the decision of being a lawyer. Don't just jump into it right away. Maybe even find out if there's certain sectors or parts of the industry that you would like to work more. Cause there's so many vast areas of law that you could work in. It's not real estate.
And I think it's by accident. I mean, all of you, I'm sure the same as me, is you get an articling job and you kind of like, okay, this is what I'm doing. And then you either like it or you don't, right? And I was saying before, I had a chance to go through bankruptcy or to a mid-sized Bay Street firm where they did like insurance litigation and corporate work. And I hated the corporate work. So I started litigating. And I think the only reason I litigated because I didn't like the other work, not because I loved litigating. So it's kind of interesting how things work out.
Yeah. I thought I was going to do international trade law.
Everybody thinks they're going to do international trade law school because they want to save the world.
Yeah.
And of course.
Now I'm doing real estate.
I only know one person from my law school that actually went into international human rights law. And I think she's somewhere in Africa, like actually doing good. But yeah, everyone else kind of comes back to reality at one point. So what did you want to be when you were 10 years old? What did you want to be?
I wanted to be an architect.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's like a firefighter or first responder of sorts, right? Because you watch the shows.
Of course. Cool, like, you want to be that guy 100%.
Yeah. It's funny that being an architect, wanting to be an architect and now doing real estate just came to me.
Yeah. There you go.
You kind of knew in general that was the case. What was your best subject in high school?
Best subject in high school? Probably phys ed.
Sounds like a lawyer response.
I wasn't very good in school.
It's a while ago, but I think I got an A on my report card in French.
Wow. Yeah. There you go. That's hence why you went to McGill and you know, great.
Yeah.
If you could have one food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Burgers.
Well, I'm eating a lot of veg these days. So can I go with like a veg stir fry?
Sure. Veg stir fry.
Beautiful. Thanks.
Okay. No problem. Yeah. One vacation left. You got 10 days. Where are you going?
Somewhere south.
That's it. That's sunny. All you got. This is your last vacation in life. Your last vacation in life.
Sun and sand. That's all I need.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
My last one, Croatia. I've been there. If it weren't my last one, I'd try something new, but it could not work out. Croatia is a lot of fun.
Gorgeous. Yeah. Gorgeous. You're stuck on an island. You have no cell phone. You can bring one thing to keep you comfortable, not a person. What are you doing? I like, for me, it was a basketball and a pump.
Soccer ball.
Some music somehow, so I could enjoy some music.
Okay. Those are my next two questions.
Oh.
Basketball or hockey?
Basketball.
Hockey.
Soccer or football?
Football.
Soccer.
Whoa.
Genre in car. Road trip genre.
Like a little convertible, I think.
No, sorry. The music.
Music. Got it. Happy folk is what I'm listening to these days.
What is happy? I'd love entertain me. What is happy folk? I have never heard of it.
Something Spotify came up with, and it seems to work for me every time I put it on.
Can you give us an example? I'm not going to ask you to say unless
say
you
like to. Nathaniel Rateliff. So it's kind of country tinge, but it's real uplifting.
Okay.
Mumford and Sons.
Oh, Mumford. Okay. Yeah. Mumford and Sons. I know.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've been really into these French. I found some French playlists on Spotify lately.
Like French rap?
Like easy listening, sort of party type upbeat music, happy music.
You understand it?
No.
But that's why you like it?
I think it's really nice. I don't know. It's got like nice tunes to it.
It's beats. Relaxing. Is it jazzy or something?
No, it's more like a, there's a little bit of like a hip hop and mixed with some like, not house music, but like more dancey style.
Hold on a second. Music. You have a small baby right now.
Yeah.
Don't all you listen to is Baby Shark?
funny enough, I was in the car the other day and, you know, the phone automatically turns on to Spotify in the car when it connects and Baby I don't know Shark. If it was Baby Shark or Baby some Shark. Other Most Music song. Man song came on.
Yeah. John, what are you? Young kids?
My youngest is 21.
Your youngest is 21. Yeah, 21. He does not listen to Baby Shark.
No. Three daughters, 27.
Oh, I also have three daughters.
Yeah.
How did you survive? Give me some tips.
Well, what do you think?
You said there. There you go. I feel like it's happening as we speak. What is your Starbucks order?
London Fog.
I don't know what that is.
It's basically a black tea with steamed milk.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Cortado. Oat milk cortado. It's like a latte, but stronger, more coffee, and just a little oat milk.
I can tell you guys officially that you are the coolest Starbucks orders on all my podcasts. All I got for the past like 2 months were coffee.
Yeah.
Black.
Milk. With
double, right? I got my podcast guys shaking their head. They're like, yeah, no, they pretty sucked. To just go back to fraud and to, you know, to wrap things up, can you give us, John, a list of things for a first-time home buyer that, you know, you say when you go to your lawyer and you ask about insurance, these are the questions you need to ask.
Right. So from a buyer's point of view, your main concern on fraud would be that the person you're buying from is not a fraudster. So there's not a lot a person can do. The bigger risk of fraud is once you've bought that house, somebody's going to steal your ID and mortgage it. And so all those tips are, you know, just general identity theft. To keep your documents safe. Don't put it on Instagram that, I paid off my mortgage and I'm going on vacation for a year.
Yeah.
Right? Not a good move. Right.
Or text back that random text from Amazon that tells you you need to change your
passcode. Correct. So it's just like, it's, you know, it all starts with ID theft. So, you know, shred your documents, make sure, you know, if you do lose your license, consider an Equifax kind of subscription for a while.
Right.
So that would be the big ones.
Okay. Excellent.